Welcome to FU, the only podcast that helps maximize blood flow to the placenta. I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
And this week we're covering House of Cards, episode 14, called Chapter 14. So, this was a big episode, man. First episode of the season, I was not expecting this much action.
Yeah, I was not. I mean, let's not bury the lead. They fucking killed off Zoe.
Yeah.
Like,
fairly dramatic fashion.
The room here at Bald Move HQ exploded when that happened. Just, I don't know, but it got me nervous in a weird way.
So what it's do you like, mean? Why?
Because we talked about this, like, how are they going to amp the intensity? Like, it took them all year to kill Peter Russo, and then I think I might even said, it's like, I wonder if they'll kill Zoe eventually.
Yeah, yeah.
But fucking kill her in the first episode?
Yeah,
is this going to turn into 24, where, like, you know, Frank's going to be torturing somebody in a White House bathroom in episode 4, or there's a nuclear bomb that's going to be deployed in episode 8? I'm...
Well, he talked to... Jackie about all the missiles she was launching, right? So
true.
Who knows?
He's going to launch a drone strike against some of these reporters.
You never
I mean,
know.
I just don't know what to expect. I had no idea.
Well, it felt a little out of character for House of Cards, right? I mean, yes, they killed Russo last season, but it was not like this was.
And I think it felt like a target of opportunity. Like, this was Frank realizing this is something he could do. Wasn't he? He wasn't planning on it. It was very careful and considered. And this felt like I really felt like he plotted this out down to the minute. Like, I'm going to give her the time it takes for this train to get here. And if I haven't talked her into my side of the fence, then I'm going to chuck her off this fucking thing.
Yeah, I mean, him and his hat and his overcoat. Makes me think that, yes, he was there for a very specific purpose.
Dressed like a nerdy hipster.
No, he looks exactly like Elvis brother. Costello.
Oh, well,
exactly.
Like I said, a nerdy hipster blues brother.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
But they killed arguably the second biggest star. Biggest star, but the second most, second most important character. This is like killing Ned Stark in season 1 of Game of Thrones, except for they did it for the season opener.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty crazy.
It was totally crazy. Not what I was expecting, which is good, I think, in a way. I don't know. I'm assuming they will not keep ramping up the action aspects of this show. We'll probably get a lot more, like, cunning and, like, plot twist sort of stuff from the rest of the season. They just can't go crazy with it.
No, I mean, because the more people you kill, more people you murder, the harder it is to cover up each individual one and the more connections they have.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. Now that Zoe is dead, Lucas basically has nothing to lose in the pursuit of Frank, right?
Except for his life.
I don't know that he cares about that right now, honestly. I mean, when he was talking with Janine in her apartment, he seemed... to not really care about the danger that was very, very obviously imminent. Unlike Janine, who was all about getting the hell out of there with every single picture in her apartment.
Yeah, I just don't... I think that the journalists never considered that they would actually be in mortal danger. And now that they are, one of their reactions is to get the fuck out of town, and the other is to double down and be like, fuck it.
Sure. I mean,
the one sleeping with the victim, notably, is the one that wants to be like, oh, fuck it. Man, what a fucking episode.
Okay, so Zoe's death was shocking in a couple of ways. A, it was shocking because I didn't see it coming just from, you know, an episode perspective. Mm-mm. But also, isn't she the wrong person to kill? Doesn't this all go away if you kill Rachel?
Yeah.
She is the only link... to anything with Russo and Frank, right?
Yeah, if he is able to kill or make her just disappear,
which they tried to do all episodes, Stamper.
But I mean, like, you know, kill in such a way that she just never comes back because
she's got
no real connections to anyone.
Exactly.
You'd think that'd make it go away.
Yeah, because Frank is never going to tell Zoe what actually happened.
So does that? Does that cast doubt on my, this was a planned out murder? Maybe it was another target opportunity.
I don't know. That's a question I have, and I hope they answer it in the following episodes somehow to at least tell us why it wasn't Rachel instead of Zoe.
Speaking of ruthless behavior, because we almost went with ruthless pragmatism for the title of the podcast. Let's talk a little bit about Claire Underwood.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Like, she's the wife that Walter White deserved.
Okay. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, my God. Not only did she, with all appearances, just completely put down the Jillian Rebellion in spectacular fashion. She forged her signature on medical releases. She canceled her insurance.
Denying her the medicine that she needed to support her baby.
Yeah,
for the next
her
four
exact
months.
Words is, I will let your child wither inside your womb if that's what it takes.
Yeah. That I couldn't believe how ruthless she was there after, like, because coming off of last season's finale,
we had a debate.
We did. We talked about it. And I kind of came down on Claire's side a little bit.
Yeah.
And now, no way. No way, man.
Yeah, this is not appropriate behavior.
Not at all.
Like, there's no way you could. So, okay. She's super, super fucking ruthless. But she's also giving Jillian the CWI.
Yeah.
Which is another plot point that we're like, what is she getting out of this? Well, now she's not going to get anything. And if that was your ultimate move, why wouldn't you just open with that instead of going through this charade of canceling your insurance and doing, was it just a power play because she's going to use her later, maybe?
I don't really know.
You know, I mean, and not just that, but I thought it was already beyond the pale when she got the guy's wife involved, the doctor from Africa. She tracked that dude down and had her ambush her outside her house and, you know, publicly shame her in front of all her neighbors. I was like, wow, that's fucking intense. Then when we got to the child, the baby withering inside your womb, do you have any idea where her plot's going?
No. Honestly, at this point, her getting out of CWI seems crazy because this is something she's built and something she worked so hard to fund last season.
Do you think this is going to involve her like working somehow for Tusk?
Tusk? Maybe she's been in contact with Remy. Now that he's working for Tusk, she's got some things in the works. I don't know.
This is kind of related. What was the decision that her and Frank were talking about in bed? She asked if he had...
Good question.
He had made... I think he said...
If he was prepared?
Yeah, if you're prepared.
He says, I've been for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that conversation was about. Are we supposed to know yet?
I don't know, because there's a lot of things in House of Cards where you start wondering what the fuck is going on, and you're like, am I supposed to know yet?
Yeah.
Like, I tried to figure out, did I miss this Jackie, who was a deputy of some sort and a third-term congressman? I know that she's being vetted to be the new House Majority Whip, but I have no idea what she was besides serving in some kind of military capacity that involved drone strikes and missile strikes. And she's been elected three times to Congress, and that's it. And she's the deputy of something.
Yeah. And other than that, we know nothing about her qualifications. But Frank obviously sees something in her, her ruthless pragmatism, obviously. I don't know where that's going yet. I mean, they're setting up a lot of stuff, right? This is episode one, so a lot of this is set up, and we're not meant to know necessarily where it's going.
One thing, when he met with over at Freddy's, they talked about the slow bleeding the pigs and how it's...
Yeah, Zoe did not get a slow bleed.
Well, that's... do you think that was... That is evidence for that this was premeditated.
I think so, yeah.
So he was just there. Do you think he would have killed her no matter what? Now I'm starting to wonder if that's the thing, that he was just basically stalling for the train to come, and his intention was always to walk away, knowing that she's kind of a bulldog and she was going to follow after him and throw her in front of the train. literally.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like there might be other clues in there that we're not picking up on, sure, having only seen it once.
Right.
Because I'm honestly on the fence on that. I'm not really sure.
Do you think there's any long-term implications from Frank being so dismissive about his security apparatus?
No, I don't think so. I mean, he wasn't like trying to say, oh, Meacham needs to be like the head of my security crew. He's just saying he needs to be on the team.
No, but he's refusing to play ball. Like he doesn't want yeah, the protection to be, although that could be because he knew he had to take care of Zoe and he had to wrap up this stuff before he,
yeah,
truly,
okay,
lost all of his privacy, because he's gonna have a bodyguard with him 24/7.
You're absolutely right. I think that's another clue as to whether or not it was premeditated that says yes, it was.
But he also wants to stay in his own brownstone. Now,
yeah,
probably part of that is just cost savings on the House of Cards staff. They don't want to build a new set.
Probably.
But
also he's comfortable there. You know?
It seems to me that Frank might be the type of man that needs a lot of security.
Sure.
And he might live to regret not having a more secure, less public home later on in the season. That's a prediction. This is one of his bald moves. I'm not really asking your opinion. I'm just going to stick out a prediction out there.
Go for it, man.
This might bite him in the ass somehow.
So my question when he refused to move was, can the president refuse to live in the White House? Like, do you have to live in the designated areas for these officials?
I guess is the Naval Observatory for the vice president.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Because, like, what if you're like, what if a guy like Tusk got to the White House and he's like, fuck this, I want to live on my
6,000 acre,
you know,
forested.
What do they call that? The villa? Like the drug dealers have. I want to live on my big drug dealer style ranch or whatever you call it, a damn thing down in Sarasota.
Uh-huh.
You know, fuck your McMansion. I've got a palace with zebras and lions and stuff. And if you want to talk to the most powerful man in the free world, feel free to book a ticket. Come down and see me. Take your kids to Disney World. But I'm not going to live in this old building.
I assume that the responsibilities of the vice president or the president are such that you cannot work remotely for extended periods of time. That's what I assume. And that's probably why they have the designated living areas, right?
I guess. But I just wonder how much of that is just pure custom, because I don't even know that that's true.
Yeah.
The way the president's schedule works, I'm pretty sure he could probably do a working commute.
For his entire term?
Yeah.
No, come on.
Yeah, why not?
A president who never steps foot in the White House?
Dude, some of these guys, like, I'm thinking, like, the Bushes and the Reagans would spend, like, 6 weeks down in their fucking ranch in California, ranch in Texas.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't seem to, you know, depending on your political leanings, it didn't seem to affect their ability to, the country didn't stop. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. I wonder if they could. And I wonder it just seems like it's a political shitstorm, because the opposing party be like, oh, you're too good for the fucking White House. Too good for staying in the house where President Lincoln slept and Andrew Jackson slept.
Yeah.
And FDR and everybody.
Is there an Underwood bedroom now?
Not yet. He's still got one more. He's still got to kill the president this season.
Okay.
Before that happens.
Toss him in front of a train.
Throw him in one of the engines, Air Force One.
Okay. So what else is there to talk about in this episode? I do like how he gets Jackie into the mix here for candidates to replace him.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't. I thought when he sat down with the president and with Birch and with the guy who used to be Terry, the guy who used to be the head of the Black Caucus and is now
the
Speaker of the
majority
House?
Leader. No, majority leader.
Majority leader.
Birch is still Speaker.
Okay. When he sat down in that room, I thought he was going to push for Jackie to be one of the candidates, but instead he just suggested an open race, and I thought that was very smart on his part.
Well, this is kind of Peter Russo all over again, where Peter Russo, he never really got mentioned, but he was developed in the background, and then he was put forth later on with some of the other candidates. I feel like he's got a bunch of dirt on these two guys, and he's going to let them slug it out and weaken themselves, and he's going to produce her who's going to be shiny and clean and no shit stuck to her,
yeah,
and competent and photogenic and all those other things, and personally loyal to him. And, you know, he'll still have that influence in that, because he's, it seems like this is a move engineered to make sure he still maintains his influence in the house.
Yeah,
because we know that without that, he's useless to Tusk.
Sure. And we saw how useless Matthews was when he was vice president, right? That's right. Not what Frank wants at all.
It's funny because there's a lot of things this episode that I thought was really important to talk about, that Zoe dying, just like all their powwows between Zoe, Janine, and Lucas.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't matter with their hill of beans. And I mean, you could talk about some of their relationship problems and what kind of motivation that would get for him to want to crusade for her, because he obviously sees her as very damaged by her, the relationship with Frank.
Yeah.
You know, and we saw some, like, she might have sexual dysfunction, or, although I had an interesting take, is like, I wonder if that was her not just being satisfied with Lucas. Like, he's, because he said, I'm safe, you know, I'm not him.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm wondering if, like, that wasn't the problem. That she was attracted to the kind of the danger and that power dynamic.
Sure.
And that relationship seemed to be headed to disaster anyway, because she did a lot of... Honestly, I'm kind of glad she died, because I was putting in my notes that I'm really tired of her just storming off with Janine or Lucas and not telling them shit and, you know, whatever. And then fan service, next scene, she got thrown in front of a train.
Yeah, that works.
We want to buy a Stamper and Rachel, a little bit darker...
Okay.
Darker heart on him. Like, mm-hmm. You know, he's all... Candyland and kittens and rainbows when she's doing what he says, but when she starts to try to exert herself, he just he reads out of the abuser's Bible. It's like, you know, I'm the only one that can protect you. You don't know how much danger you're in. And we see where she set up in the new place. She's basically sleeping on, you thought it was an air mattress. I thought she was just sleeping on the floor with a lamp and Indian food to guide her.
I don't know. So how much of what Stamper is telling her does he believe himself? Like, does he think that she is in a ton of danger from Frank should he find out that
I do
she's
believe,
told anything? And he's legitimately trying to protect her by moving her and keeping her out of the spotlight?
I would say it's about 50-50.
Okay.
Because I think he is afraid that she is in real danger from Frank, because if he can't handle this...
Yeah.
Of course, he doesn't know Zoe's been dead. It'll be interesting to see what his reaction is to that, because at what point will Stamper be like, Jesus Christ, enough is enough.
You've killed enough people.
Right.
I don't want to do this anymore.
I mean, we see that he's not necessarily above slapping a woman that he's been kind of close to around, which is troubling. I just don't know what the moral basement for any of these people are. Like Claire... We didn't talk about this.
Oh, yeah.
The end of the episode, I thought it was very clear when she's walking by the television, they're talking about the death of Zoe, that she clearly realized that Frank had something to do with that.
It seemed like it, yeah.
Now, what I don't know is when she's put on the makeup, if that was a genuine like acceptance or pleased, or if she's actually trying to mask her own fear and concerns and doesn't want, you know, to let on to Frank that she knows. Like, if this is them growing closer together as this ultimate Machiavellian pair, or this is the beginning of her building her own walls around herself.
Yeah, that scene was played so subtly that I'm not sure which way to go on that.
Which is great.
That's perfect. That's what you want, especially in episode one of the season. You want that to unfold naturally. So I'm sure we'll see more about that.
Why do you think they sent nude photos of Zoe to Janine?
That's a good question.
Like,
I don't know.
Just to up the what the fuck factor, or just because it seems like that would be a very smoking gun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we is like it's too like we're, you know, Frank kills a woman that he already has a connection to, although he did have her completely wipe out the connections, and we're going to pretend that iCloud services don't exist.
Sure.
But he's got connections to this woman already, and then he mails her the nude photos, the same day he had to have done it, dropped them in the mail. That man, it just seems like that would be more evidence to connect that there's wrongdoing here.
What was this? Was this to inspire fear in Janine and Lucas to back off?
Clearly.
Okay.
But I don't know that it just seems like it seemed like that's what the writers intended us to feel like. But to me, that just seemed very risky. Like a way to, you know, it's be like if he showed up at Janine's house and like mooned her or did a yard job or TP'd. It's like, you know, at what point is enough enough?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're just leaving more forensic evidence.
Sure. It was a big FU to Janine, right?
Yes.
Big FU.
The only other thing we haven't touched on is Christine. She, in the very early goings of the episode, we saw her talking to Linda Vasquez, which if you don't recall is the president's chief of staff, about a possible job at the White House. And Linda was talking about it'd be a crushing workload and all this and that. She didn't seem concerned. I'm still not sure exactly what the hell she's doing in the capacity for working for the White House.
But yeah, I don't know.
We do know she got the job because at the end of the episode, she was there while Frank was doing his briefing with the Majority Leader and the Speaker of the House. So that's it for our instant take, but starting next week, we'll be doing a longer, more in-depth weekly cast for House of Cards. Be sure to send us your thoughts and feedback to houseofcards@baldmove.com. And we just might read it on air. If you've enjoyed our show, please help us get our new House of Cards podcast launched in style by rating, reviewing, and subscribing on iTunes. You can also support us by using our Amazon affiliate link when you shop online. Just go to amazon.baldmove.com and we'll get a tiny cut of Amazon's profits from whatever you buy on that session. Best of all, it costs you nothing. Be sure to tell your friends, family, and coworkers about Bald Move. Also, check out our website for all our other television coverage for Game of Thrones, Mad Men, Walking Dead, Breaking Bad, and Downton Abbey, and all of our general pop culture casts like Personal Arrogance and The Picasso Show. Keep up with the latest on Twitter at Bald Move and on Facebook.com/Bald Move. See you next episode.